It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex Lindsay are here. We're going to talk about all the Mac news, and particularly about the flaw we found last week, the full story behind the root login. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 587, recorded Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. High Def Buddha. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Joby. Joby's GorillaPod is the signature flexible tripod amongst leading photographers, journalists, and vloggers. It's changing the content creation game for good. Grip it, wrap it, stand it. See the full line at Joby.com. And don't forget to enter Twit at checkout to get 15% off your order. And by Video Blocks, by Story Blocks. Get all the high-quality stock video, audio, and images you can imagine for $149 a year. Go to videoblocks.com/MacBreak today. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Renee Ritchie's here from iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
My head is so big, Leo, I can't get it Andy-sized. I've been trying, but I don't know what's going on.
Andy's head is giant. I don't know what he's
It's the
done.
New version of Skype. It's like it doesn't show me the chat. I don't know. Anyway, I'm trying my best. I hope my head is...
Your head looks perfect.
Your lighting looks okay. Great.
Yeah, you actually look really good. And of course, when are you moving? Soon, right?
Sometime between now and middle January.
Now that you've got it all set.
Yes.
Let's move. We also have Andy Iannocco. Now, the new improved Andy Iannocco, where his voice matches his lips. Oh, are you doing that?
I'm joking with you. I'm joking with you.
It's great to see you, Andy. Chicago Sun-Times, of course, CWOB.com. And we owe a little bit of gratitude to this cat right here, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps, who hooked Andy up, as the kids say.
I like good audio.
Mm-hmm. I cannot lie.
I like to spread the love.
I cannot lie. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. And Sound Devices is going to make a little money off of us this holiday season. I bought myself a
Just
Christmas
let me
gift.
Buy. Yeah.
Renee wants
you know,
that's,
one. That's one. That's one of the big truths. People have been asking me about should I get the iPhone 8 or the iPhone 10. And the thing is, once you find a tool that is perfect for you, that you realize that this solves so many problems, you forget about how much something costs. Assuming that you have the money for it, but it's like whereas my eyes would have like glossed over. Oh, sure, I'm going to spend $600 on an audio interface recorder. That's going to happen. And then I use this. Yeah, that's going to happen. That is definitely going to happen.
I think that that's true. And I think, you know, Apple has shown that people are not as price sensitive, at least based on what looks like the best-selling iPhone of all time.
Yeah.
Not as price sensitive as we might have expected. I mean, the iPhone 10 is they're now up to, I think we reported this last week, 500,000 units a day, according to Ming-Chi Kuo and KG Securities at the Foxconn plant in China. That's what is about 15 million a month. That seems like they should be able to feed the demand, but maybe not.
Well, they're not getting to, I think, about a week of delay now.
They're down to a week.
Yeah. So I think it sounds like they've gotten whatever was in the pipe is through it.
Yep. Yep. And they've really beefed up production. So that's pretty impressive.
I have to say, I was kind of amazed at the difference. I haven't used the 8, but I was carrying around, I was in India last week and carrying around a 7. And my ex, and the reason is the 7 is on T-Mobile, so it works in India. And taking pictures with both of them, I was amazed at how much better the X camera is than the 7.
Is it really?
Taking pictures in the same environment, and I was like, I'm not going to.
They say it's
anymore.
Like a half stop better in low light, but it'll engage the telephoto lens, the quote unquote telephoto lens, about 2 stops earlier than the 7.
Oh, interesting. Also, now you can get the unlocked version. They just started offering that in the U.S. So that would actually be maybe something you'd want to take a look at. You don't have to be tied to any carrier. That's about right, right? It used to take it's taken longer in the past.
In the U.S., it's weird because we get them SIM-free day one.
I think you have to.
I bet you there's rules. I bet the CRTC or somebody.
Maybe, but like I think the little known secret is that the T-Mobile one, I believe, is always SIM unlocked, and the Verizon one is GSM unlocked, even though it's CDMA on Verizon, but the GSM slot is unlocked. So people usually who want it right away, they usually go for one of those two models.
Yeah, I have a T-Mobile. I don't know if it's SIM unlocked, but I should try it. Verizon has a deal with our FCC in the U.S. that they can't lock their SIM slots, so the LTE stuff is unlocked. But I use the eSIM. I might regret that because it was really nice to be able to pop the SIM and put it in another phone. And the eSIM is kind of tied to that phone now, right?
Yeah, not only that, but like for AT&T, I made the stupid mistake of returning my iPhone 10 the day before I was headed to DC for like 3 or 4 days and thought that I could just, you know, re-sign in with my old SIM. But no, of course, AT&T canceled out my old SIM as soon as the new eSIM got created.
Right.
So it's not so you could switch from one to another now. No. You'll basically have to go. I had to go back to as the first thing I did in DC was find an AT&T store and give a nice young man $5 to give me a brand new SIM.
So here's my question.
Use my old phone.
Here's my question. All right, now I've activated this with. Is this like the old bad old days with CDMA? Once you activate it with Verizon, you couldn't use it with anything else. Or does this eSIM? Is it reprogrammable? Now that I've activated it with T-Mobile, let's say I wanted to move to Verizon or AT&T. Well, I guess it'd have to be a GSM carrier, AT&T. Can I call AT&T and say, "Take this SIM over"? Or have I locked this phone now?
I don't know.
Renee, do you have any idea?
I don't, because I haven't played around too much with the eSIM. I have heard stories where people say it locks right away, but I don't know if that's...
Remember in the old days in the iPad it did, and this was AT&T doing this. The iPad had that, it still had a SIM, but it had a non-denominational SIM, the secular SIM. But at first, I think AT&T backed down on this, but when you activated that iPad with AT&T, that SIM got burnt into AT&T land, and you'd have to get a different SIM if you want it. Now, I think AT&T is backed down on that. So I would love to get some clarity on this eSIM, because really that's not an improvement. That's kind of like the old CDMA activation thing. I had to call T-Mobile and activate it, right, with EI number and tell them I have a new phone, and they said, okay, we'll activate eSIM? It. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe they might be able to there's got to be a way to change that, but I would never.
Yeah, well, they have to, because Apple's very well. Also, Apple's aware of the resale market for it. So I'm sure they wouldn't have it locked in, but I'm sure they're looking at it from a point of view of, isn't it nice that you don't have to worry? We don't have to include a tool. We don't have to say, here's how you insert your SIM into this thing. It's like, nope, you buy it. You tell us what your phone number is. Your carrier will make sure that by the time your phone arrives, we'll be ready to rock and roll without you having to do anything else. So I think we have to, that's one area to say that.
It's not, though, because I got my T-Mobile. It was not activated. It was not usable until I called T-Mobile and assigned that IMEI number to T-Mobile. Huh. So it's not just comes out of the box ready to go.
I have to admit, with my ex, I just popped the SIM out of my old phone and stuck it in my new phone.
You could still do that. I think that might be – I'm just saying for users, maybe that's the thing to do.
It was just like it was working in minutes.
Right.
You know.
What carrier did you use, Andy?
AT&T.
Was this a review unit?
No. I bought the one I have right now is a review unit. The one that I bought, though, when I bought it, it took me to like an AT&T page within the Apple Store app saying, what's your phone number? Great. We'll make sure it's set up. And so when I took it out of the box, it was my phone.
So they don't do that with T-Mobile, which kind of is, I guess, because it's really unlocked. They just say, who's your carrier? You say T-Mobile. They said, okay, fine. Yeah. And they don't do anything. They don't verify or anything. Right. And then when you get it, you have to sign it up. So I really want to know. I mean, how locked am I? Have I just, in effect, by using the eSIM carrier, locked my phone?
No, I think you can still pop the SIM out and put another SIM in, can't you?
There's no SIM in it.
There's no SIM slot?
There is, but there's no SIM because it's an eSIM.
Yeah, but maybe
if I put somebody else's SIM in there, would it overwrite?
What do you think?
I would guess.
I'd love to know.
iMore. Get on that, will you?
You know how restricted I am that I'm not in the U.S.? I would love to be doing all this stuff. But you have a different
situation.
Serenity.
Well, and it may be a call to Apple. I don't know. Because I could tell you right now, if I call T-Mobile.
No, I'm sure there's so many U.S. phone nerds. I'm sure that they've done this for years now and have all these answers. I've just never paid attention to them because I'm a selfish Canadian.
Well, inquiring minds, and we've just raised an issue we don't have the answer to. But this comes now because they're selling these You can actually apparently go into the store today. If you order it online, you'll get it December 13th. But if you go into an Apple store today, you could pick up an unlocked carrier agnostic iPhone 10.
So what did they do before today? If you went to the Apple store, did they force you to pick carrier?
You had to pick. But if you pick, as I pointed out, if you pick T-Mobile, they would go, okay, good. They didn't do anything. They just said, okay, which tells me it was a carrier unlocked version, right?
Yeah. So it's all just sophistry.
I guess.
Yeah. Because if you go in and say, I just want the phone, here is $1,200.
I have an AT&T SIM at home. I should just plug it in.
Because what happens. I mean, there's a lot of people who just buy them to ship them overseas, and I'm sure they're not buying locked versions.
And it used to be the advice was to get the Verizon one because you get all the radio bands, CDMA and GSM, and an unlocked SIM.
And the Qualcomm modem.
But who else does CDMA?
Yeah, I have. Thank you. Let's talk about that.
Yeah,
they did it again. There's Qualcomm modems for the CDMA versions, and there's Intel modems. And once again, the Intel modems are not as fast as the Qualcomm modems.
So it's a yes and no thing. So Infineon was the original iPhone modem company, and they got bought by Intel, and Apple went to Qualcomm. Now Apple's using both because Apple and Qualcomm are at war.
Jeez,
but Apple
they sure
doesn't.
Are. Oh boy.
Apple doesn't spec them for that high speed anyway. So if they were using Qualcomm modems, they would still ship with whatever they said LTE Advanced 800. It wouldn't be enabled for gigabit Ethernet. Gigabit. LTE or anything. Apple's basic thing is, hey, supplier, we need someone who can run a 10 second 100 meters. And they're like, we can do it in 9. Fine. We can do it in 9.5. Fine. As long as it's under 10, they don't care. So whatever the spec is, if you can beat it, that's fine. But they're not implementing anything over it.
Okay. And we know in the past that actually Apple artificially slowed down the Qualcomm modems to their spec. Here's the test. Here's the testing from a PC Magazine. And it shows that the orange line is Qualcomm. It's not a big difference. The Intel is the blue.
Qualcomm
line.
Makes better modems. I mean, they invented a lot of the technology that's in them. They just simply make better modems right now.
Where you'll notice the biggest difference is where the signal is weak. The Qualcomm continues to get good speeds even in poor coverage areas.
And the trade-off here is that if they went purely with Qualcomm modems like they used to, everybody was paying, even people outside the U.S. was paying the CDMA tax because we don't need those CDMA radios. They don't do any good for us, but because it was Qualcomm, Apple had to pay for them for every phone that it shipped anyway.
Apple eventually would like to do it themselves, right? I mean, they don't want to be beholden to either Qualcomm or Intel.
It's great that all those lawsuits are happening now, isn't it? Before Apple rolls out the C-series modem chips or whatever.
Lord.
Or the L-series modem chips. Mm.
All right. So what's our advice then? If you're going to buy an iPhone, buy it unlocked. Why not? Should you get the Verizon or should you just get the...
For a lot of people, the leasing programs, like the iPhone buyers program or whatever the T-Mobile and AT&T versions are, you pay like $30 a month and you get a new phone every year. And that
I'm going to do that next financing. Time. Because it doesn't cost any more, right, if you get from Apple.
Yeah. And you get Apple Care.
Do you get that for free or do they build that in the
Apple
price?
Apple Care Plus, I believe it's for free.
So you don't pay an additional...
And it's, and you're still at 0% financing.
And as long as you keep that phone in good shape or you get it repaired to acceptable shape, you trade it in at the when the new one comes out and you just continue to pay that $25 or $30 a month every year.
A listener just, nameless, so they bought the iPhone 10 and they popped out its Verizon SIM and put in their AT&T one and it just worked fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We thought that would work with Verizon.
So now I'm kind of like wishing I just bought a Verizon phone.
That was always the advice. Buy the Verizon, at least in previous years, buy the Verizon.
It turns out it's still the case.
Because you get the Qualcomm modem, you get CDMA and GSM and it's unlocked because the FCC won't let them lock it. That's in the U.S.
Well, there's the tip for the day if you haven't bought your 10 yet.
And it confirmed, it's been the tip for a couple of years now, but it confirms that it's the same for 10. I say it all the time, buy the Verizon one. But it confirms it for the 10, which I wasn't sure about because I thought the eSIM is complicating things. All right.
Carriers hate that.
Last week was a fun show because in the middle of the show, we learned about a flaw, fixed the flaw, and then it came back. But we'll talk about that in just a second.
That was only the first flaw, I did not sleep much last week.
I bet not. We'll give you the skinny, the scoop on all of that. And iOS 11.2, which is out now.
So happy that we
can. And I'll tell you the story of how I reconditioned my 2012 15-inch MacBook Pro. And it's great. It's great. It's like the old days.
It's the MacBook God intended.
I was going to, after Marco's column about the perfect MacBook, which is the they still sell the 2015 edition on the Apple Store without the touch bar, with a 15-inch screen,
it's
with
great.
A real keyboard. And you have a lot of them, and you have one right in front of you, in fact.
I have one in front of me.
And I said, oh, I should get one. And John Jammer B said, we got about 100 of those.
Three.
Well, that's all right.
My 2015 MacBook Pro just came back from service, has a brand new battery.
Lilith
14, I think. And because the battery is fused with the bottom plate, they also had to give me a new bottom plate, which means that the dent from the one bad thing I did with it has been repaired. So
Lilith is her crumpled horn is fixed.
And because the battery, two of the cells were swollen, even though it's like well out of warranty, they did it for free.
Baby Lilith. So I was we had four because I took one home. mine was the one. Remember, I had put all those comic book stickers on the keys.
Yes,
and I put a sticker on the front and everything. But I found out that the iFixit sponsor, iFixit kit, has a spudger that's perfect for moving stickers from keys. And I just got them all off. Look, we got a whole. So I should trade in mine for the most recent of these. Although I have to say, mine's 2012. It's an i7. Okay, it caps out at 2.3 or something gigahertz. It's fine. I had upgraded it with another World Computing SSD. It has a Mercury SSD. It's great. So this one is, you have to go by serial number, right? Because they're all A1998. Yeah, that is. So which one's yours, John?
No.
Do you know? Oh, you have yours. So whose are these? Do we take them from people, or are they just sitting around?
They're kids. They're kids without MacBooks now, Leo.
Are there kids without MacBooks in this house? So employees actually have acquired these. Is there anything that's available?
These are available. No.
Those are available? Let me look up the serial numbers. Because that's the funny thing is they're all the same model number from 2012 to 2015. But if you look at the serial number, you can see how they're equipped and all that stuff.
Right.
And so go into your closet. Find the best one. Clean it up. Peel off the stickers, reinstall High Sierra.
I'm still working on getting mine to really run as well as it did before High Sierra.
Oh, well, that's another story for another day. In fact, let's talk about that in a second. But first, a word
from our sponsor.
I'll give you one guess who our sponsor is. I am magnetizedly. This is probably not good for a microphone.
I was going to say, I don't know how does Leo sound now. It's like a little thing is like
so perfect. You know? I love my Jobies. These are the original GorillaPods. You know when the GorillaPod first came out? Take a guess.
2003.
I can't. I want to say 2004 or five.
2003, 2004 or five, 2008, 2006. So you guys are pretty close. I'm impressed.
I remember when it came out. Cats, I was like, oh, my God.
You didn't have the little magnet things forever.
Yeah, these are the... So, watch. You can... these...
Oh, my God.
Do not do this at home. But these are socketed joints, and they make them. By the way, I want to get the new... there's one that's aluminum. It's metal, right?
I have that.
Oh, it looks so beautiful.
It is like the jaw of life. A jaw of camera. Like, you can take an SLR... And attach
it'll
it
hold everything.
To a pole.
Yeah. So these are all socketed individually, these GorillaPod legs, which means you can bend them. And the one I have, which I really like, this is the GripTight one, has magnetic feet. So like when we were on the river cruise, I just glommed it to the side of the boat and had the camera. And this I have this is the camera attachment that holds any camera, right? It's expandable. And then on it has a little Bluetooth dongle. So this is like the perfect selfie camera. 10 million sold. Yep. And they're getting better and better. The new designs, of course, feature their signature ball and socket joint legs, but now rubberized grip rings, stainless steel reinforced ball heads, a 90-degree tilt. They're getting better and better heads, which is really nice. Although these are quarter 20 threads, so you could use any kind of head I guess you wanted on these. But they've got some really great 90-degree tilt heads for landscape or portrait modes. The flexible legs wrap around objects. Unlimited angles, precise composition control, stability on uneven surfaces. and they have them for all sizes. They have them for point and shoots for action cameras, like the GoPros. If you have a GoPro and you don't have a Joby, you're missing the boat. And I really like the fact that I can put my iPhone or any phone in my GripTight, and it's just ready to go. It's just ready to go. They have them for DSLRs too. You can mount. You know what's a really good use? I don't know if you've done this. You can also mount strobes on these. And they're so inexpensive, you could place strobes all over the place off camera.
Right.
So you can really have a nice portable lighting setup. Any device with a quarter 20 mount. Grip it, wrap it, stand it. Choose the Gorilla Pod that's right for you at Joby.com. And don't forget, if you use the offer code TWIT, they're even more affordable. Actually, I got to do that because I want to get the metal one.
Your phone is sliding.
My phone is what?
It's sliding.
Oh, look at that. It's just sliding. You think it'll fall off the table at some point? I better put it in a Joby grip tight right here. There you go. Now it's not going anywhere. I can even attach it to the microphone with its magnetic legs. Now the mic's going to fall over, but the camera phone is going to be safe. Joby.com, 15% off. Actually, I'm going to take advantage of that and get the nice one.
15. I got them for my godkids. They love
Aren't
them.
Aren't they great?
Yeah.
They're so great. Yeah, they just put them everywhere and they hang and shoot.
I love them.
I always have one in my bag because whatever it is I need to do by putting my camera somewhere, whether I need it to be a tripod, whether I need it to be something that will let me hang it from above, or it's just I've even often used it for as like an impromptu iPad stand or an iPhone stand.
Oh yeah,
you can bend like the feet into like little hooks and put it on the top of the seat back in front of you. Just it really earns its money back and it's well worth buying the real thing.
I have used them since the first time they were shown in CES. And I have used them on every continent except Antarctica. I haven't been to Antarctica yet.
Yeah, me neither. That's my last continent, too. Yeah. And then you're right. Everywhere I go, this is the one I carry in my briefcase because I have it at all times. And this is the GripTight 1GP Magnetic Impulse, the full name. And having the Bluetooth remote, it's always on here, so I don't lose it. But I could pull it off, and now I can do a selfie anywhere.
I have an Instagram friend who uses those, puts them on something like one mountaintop, and then runs to another mountaintop and takes his hero pose with his Apple Watch remotely. Yes. And it's amazing.
Yes. 15% off. Great holiday gift for the photographer in your life or the iPhoneographer in your life. Just go to Joby, Joby.com, and enter the offer code TWIT at checkout. I love our sponsors because it's all stuff we use, and so we could just really enthuse. Yeah. Enthuse. It also makes an excellent hat.
It does.
If you just want to, yeah. And, yeah, you can use them as selfie sticks, sure, and all kinds of ways.
Well, remember, just a warning, though, you have to make sure you get the three legs into the perfect pyramid shape, because if they're bent a little, you won't get the psychic residue from the cosmic.
Yeah, you want to channel it, right, yeah. So with the GripTight, if you get the GripTight 1, get the Bluetooth dongle on it, too, because that's really awesome. Enough of Joby. Let's talk about last week. So last week, it turns out, and actually, the guy who we mentioned the tweet that Lemmy Orhan put out, the Turkish developer, we saw it, Lemmy Orhan Erdoğan, I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it, tweeted, "Dear Apple support, we notice a huge security issue in High Sierra. Anyone can log in as root with an empty password if you click on the login button several times. Are you aware of it, Apple?" He got a lot of heat saying that's not how you reveal a security flaw. So he wrote a Medium post saying, hey, let me explain. we had actually found this issue a couple of weeks before. There were mentions even earlier, November 13th, in the Apple Developer Forum. We informed Apple about it on November 23rd. Apple either hadn't noticed or hadn't replied or hadn't said anything. And he found out because he says he works at Turkish Software Craftsmanship, I guess. He said that my IT team, my infrastructure staff, informed me they had to set up a root password on my Mac so it won't have the issue. And he saw it. And he said, what? So he decided to tweet it. And I'm kind of glad he tweeted it because we were able, during the show, we came up with a mitigation. I made it a little more complicated than it had to be. A couple of people tweeted me, you could just type that all in one line. Give your root account, if it is active, a password by typing sudo password, PASSWD root, and then hit return. But the issue is normally, actually, I think kind of, Renee, you went through this all on iMore.com, and you spent a long time, another sleepless night for poor Renee Ritchie.
Yes.
The root account isn't enabled on a Macintosh.
Yes.
So you wouldn't normally even be able, if it were enabled, is it always a blank password? I guess it would be.
No.
Oh, it's not?
If, Well, if you enable it, I believe it forces you to set a password when you enable it.
At that point. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and this was strange. So it wasn't enabled, but if you, the first time you tried to, like, you just pressed return or you clicked login, it would then basically burn in that login attempt and make it enabled with no password.
Oh, that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's why
it was like a checkpoint.
That's why it went, yeah. And then, okay. And from then on, it would do it with the blank one.
Yeah.
And then I noticed, you know, of course, it could be used to log into your machine if you had multi-user login turned on, right?
Yes.
But you had to turn
And some people were saying, like, I tried. I just could not get other to show up. But some people were saying you could go into guest. And then if you were smart, you could escalate from guest account.
Okay.
If you had guest enabled. Like, it was just, there were so many things. And if you had file vault, it would prevent it from unlocking maybe. But you never want, like, a lot of uncertainty around these situations. Right.
And I did, when I set up the 15-inch PowerBook, I noticed the default is to have the other enabled. So you would have to.
I think FileVault kills that when you turn on FileVault.
Turn on FireVault,
it kills that. Yeah.
Okay. So machines that had, because when I before I logged into it just to see what was on there before I, you know, refreshed it, and it didn't, and I couldn't figure out how to get another user.
Yeah.
So I could try the root password. So Apple, within 18 hours, thank you for tweeting this, because Apple was ignoring it, had ignored it for at least 2 weeks. Within 18 hours of Lemmy's tweet, they fixed it.
Yeah, that was absolutely the right thing to do, because we often talk about how there's news that something's been compromised, there's a security flaw, and it always turns out to be something like, well, if you can get someone to do this under their own account and then do this, then you deploy this payload. This was as simple as just log in as root, no password, do it a couple times, if it doesn't work the first time, and you're in. That was so simple that you really had no choice but to raise the alarm, make sure that people lock down their machines until Apple puts out a bug fix, because it was that big a problem. That was the barn doors way open.
We went around the studio and the offices and made sure that everybody with a Mac had fixed it. Not with the Apple patch, but with the workaround, which was to assign a password for the root user, which is a fairly easy thing to do. I mean, you could do it in just a couple of lines.
Generally, always look at ways to kind of close up your security holes, you know, like getting rid of the other, getting rid of, you know, unless you really need that, turn that stuff off.
Turn on
you know,
the,
you
know,
yeah,
it's the quick sign.
It's really tight. And like, I'm always amazed at people who leave their phone unlocked, you know, like without a passcode.
I think it's more than half, but Apple's changed that because they now require you to set a passcode, right? When you set up the phone.
For a lot of things, for Apple Pay, for Touch ID, for Face ID, which has changed the numbers dramatically.
But until then, I think most people didn't. They said, I just want to swipe up. I just want to unlock.
When I have,
or they do it when they traveled, but they would turn it back off again when they got home or something. Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a huge, I mean, it's your, I mean, especially if your mail's coming in there and everything else. And especially now that there's so much tied up there that you can really have a horrible day if someone gets a hold of that. And so
that phone especially.
Yep.
Yeah. So then Apple updated. So Apple pushed out a fix, which it's interesting.
Oh, Leo, before we go on, I should just say that there are. So it's not that people ignored it. The people were actually stunned. Like, the people who could actually do something about it did not know about it. They were stunned and surprised like everybody else. And there are ways to communicate with them, but they just, nobody was bothering to check that forum. And I don't know how he communicated with them, but Apple does have like a security hotline that you can get through to the security team, and they are usually very responsive.
Had
about
they
things.
Done that, it probably would have been fixed sooner. They should have.
But you can't expect everybody to know about those things either, so it's sort of a...
Yeah, but it's I have to say that there's some part of the infrastructure at Apple that I think needs a lot of work is how they communicate with the people who keep their software and systems running. This is... The fact that Apple didn't even reply to say we have heard you and we're working on it, even if they don't get you know, reply from Tim Cook saying thank you, here's $1,000 iTunes store credit, it kind of falls in line with what I've been hearing from a bunch of people on a bunch of different areas about how there seems to be a thicker wall between people who need to communicate with Apple, and we're not just talking about users, we're talking about people at much higher levels, and being able to at least get confirmation that what they've said has been heard.
Okay.
Even when they say something that Apple took to heart, not bothering to get a response that says, "Yep, we heard you and we're working on it." Basically people are left to think what happened.
Let me just point out, I just Googled, how do I tell Apple about a security flaw? And the number two result is contact Apple about security issues with all the information you need to let them know there's a problem.
Yeah, security.
So it isn't that hard to figure out.
It's frustrating. There are people who are like emailing top Apple executives about why can't me and my wife both register Face ID, and then suddenly they're getting a response back from the top person, and like
Tim Cook has some other things to do. Well, although if you mail Tim Cook, he probably puts it to the right.
If you catch him on the treadmill, like he'll respond. Exactly. If he's in a meeting, he'll catch back.
He's very
later.
Responsive while he's cleaning his office.
The Clover machine has to be sparkling, Alex. It has to be sparkling.
Yes.
Security and privacy researchers. To report security or privacy issues that affect Apple products, contact product-security@apple.com. And if you want to encrypt it, here's our public key for PGP so we can encrypt it. There's also a security announced mailing list. There's, you know, I mean, there's ways to tell them. So yeah,
no, and it's absolutely their job to do it. But their red team and their security team, they were up all night, and they would probably have rather fixed it, you know, the week before than had to come in.
Yeah. So, but then, so first of all, the way they patched it was interesting because it was a silent update.
Yes.
Is that how often does Apple do that?
Once before.
Once before.
Once before. Yeah.
So you didn't have to look for it. You didn't have to know about it. You didn't even have to reboot your machine. It would just appear.
Mm-hmm. You could, yeah. So you could do it right away, but they said like later that afternoon it would start pushing live.
And I think especially because it was tweeted out, they were just like, "We gotta."
I love it though that they can fix stuff like that silently, because that is really an important capability. Yeah. It's a capability. For instance, when we talk about Internet of Things devices, we say one of the critical things in all Internet of Things that devices must have, especially routers, is automatic updates that can be pushed out by the manufacturer. Because otherwise, you have to figure it out, check it, update it.
Of course, eventually someone will hack into the thing that is updating them all.
That has happened in the past, actually.
Or there's a bug in the update, which has happened in the past, too. Yeah.
And that's why Apple is very judicious about using it. They've only used it twice now. Mm-hmm. But, this is a good occasion for using that.
There is some discussion about that, because you're absolutely right in that security updates are super important for IoT devices, particularly as they get cheaper and cheaper and you don't know where a lot of these chipsets are coming from. But the problem is that if you build in a mechanism so that an automatic update can happen, then a bad person can hijack that system to push a malware-infested update to the device too. So it's not quite as simple as that, but I think we're going to have a big meltdown before people really understand that when they put a smart fridge in their house, it doesn't mean that you just get a barcode reader for your food. It means that you also get another point of access, another point of entry into your house for bad people.
Well, then we should probably point out that you can disable it. If you really don't like the idea of Apple being able to force these upgrades, you can go in and disable the...
Oh, yeah? Where do you do that?
It's in settings. I'll pull it up and see where it is, but so you can turn it off in your settings. You
typically would do that in an enterprise where the IT department wants to really keep an eye on updates.
Yeah, and managed devices are a whole other ball of wax.
Managed devices.
They have their own policies and everything.
Yeah. Well, then Apple updated High Sierra and broke it.
Yeah.
Oops.
Because it went so fast, it probably wasn't in the... Yeah. It wasn't in the...
They reintroduced the flaw.
We have a different team. We have one team that fixed it and the other team that's just working on the update.
And there's a separate pipeline.
Yeah.
So where do we stand now? What should people do? I've done all the updates. Is it still there?
If you did the patch before you actually updated to the new version of High Sierra, then updating the new version of High Sierra would reverse the patch. And I believe you had to reboot and then reapply the patch to make it all hunky-dory again.
And it doesn't warn you that you have to reboot. So that's the word.
No. So I think the problem here is that Apple said that it was the update was required before you run this patch, but they didn't force it. And I think if they'd forced it or said you need to update to High Sierra 13.2. or whatever it was first, then they applied the patch, it would have been fine. But because the patch required it but didn't enforce it, some people ran the patch on the older version of High Sierra, and then software update did its thing and just overwrote the patch.
So if you have 10.13.1, that reopened the root bug, you can then go install the security fix. And you'll have, by the way, you have to find it. You have to Google.
If you had 10.13.1, it had the flaw. And then if you updated, so did 13.2. But the patch was for 13.2. So if you ran the patch on 13.1, then installed 13.2, you just gave yourself the bug again.
Got it.
And you'd have to. I think it wouldn't recognize the patch unless you rebooted first, and then it would recognize the patch was available.
So, is everybody fixed or no?
I mean, for that, there's still the calendar bug that we'll talk about later.
Yeah,
but for that, I believe.
So, should people just prophylactically reboot?
Yeah, I mean, one of the downsides of this update in place is that it doesn't reboot. Like this update, the patch that hit everybody, it didn't force you to reboot. Yeah, it couldn't reboot. And it's usually a good practice to reboot anyway when you do these sorts of updates because you never know what processes they really hit. So reboot, yeah, apply the patch. And at that point, you should be good. And you can try it. If you have any doubt whatsoever, just lock your computer or just go to settings, security, click the little lock icon and try to log in with root blank password and make sure you're protected.
That's probably a good thing for everybody just to do right now. Go to your system preference panes. Normally they're locked. If you can unlock them with root blank, then you might want to. But how do you get that patch? You have to search for Apple security patch?
Yeah, or I believe, again, if you reboot, it should offer it up to you if you're not already running it.
Oh, it should do it. It should say, hey, we've got an update. Yeah. So it shows up in the update.
I don't know if it's just a push notification because I ran it right away. That was my mistake, and I can't go back and uninstall
everything. Here's what you search. This is what you should do. Search for security update 2017-001.
Yeah.
And or you can even just go directly to support.apple.com and go to the support note HT208315, and that will let you down. It actually has all the information about it, but it will also let you download the update and manually apply it. And so, and in fact, it even gives you a kind of a roundabout way of seeing if you have the problem using a command called what?
Do we think that the root thing was just a programmer just wanting to make it easy to do something while they were working?
It might have been a test that they just didn't turn off again afterwards, like just a test condition. And then they're like, they went on to the next thing and didn't go back and reverse it.
Right.
Yeah, I would imagine that inside Apple, they often have root enabled. I don't know why, but sometimes you want to get in there and
poke. Right. It just seems like it would be something that you're working on something, so you just kind of throw that in so that you can just quickly get into whatever you need to do.
It might be more complicated than that, though, because it was a kind of a strange bug. Right.
And sometimes it's future features that they're testing. And they don't talk about them because they're future features.
But so we won't know, frankly.
Right. Yeah. Suffice to say that over the past few weeks, a lot of additions have been made to the standard iOS and macOS QA scripts that they run at Apple before they release something. This was a profoundly dunderheaded move. And you've got to believe that one of the monkey tests they run, where they just run scripts to see if we can break this thing, it's going to be, here is every single dumb thing that we could have done to compromise the login screen, and they just found another dumb thing they forgot to test for.
Well, I'm guessing they're going to test for that from now on.
Yeah.
That's made it to the list.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks before they fixed it, it was mentioned in the support forums, but don't count on support forums being the way to notify Apple of anything, right? Call the security. You can Google it. It's not hard to do. So it should be fixed. Anybody who's running High CR should reboot to reapply that patch in case.
And just test that little lock button until you know you're secure.
Yeah. Okay. Apple has acquired a company, I'm happy to say, as a podcaster that does called Pop-Up Archive that does transcripts. But not for user readable
reading, but searching.
Yeah. But for searching
and discovery and categorization. This is really, really big because not only allow you to have imagine having a Google style alert for a topic that you want to hear discussed, and you find out that someone you've never heard of had a 2-hour interview with David Letterman because they happen to live in the same Montana community and this podcast you never heard of is suddenly front and center for you. Or imagine it being able to do a Apple Music style recommendations for here's some podcasts that we think you're going to be interested in based on the episodes that you hearted. We're not just saying that not just going by the keywords on here's the thing, and MacBreak Weekly are categorized as, but you seem to heart a lot of shows in which we're talking about Macintosh and Macintosh security flaws. Here are a bunch of other not just podcasts but podcast episodes. They're talking about subjects you seem to be interested in. So this could be such a cool tool for making the podcast app a lot more relevant than it has been for a while.
Nicholas Kwa, who writes a podcast newsletter for Neiman Lab called Hot Pod, discovered this. Yeah, I mean, we don't know what Apple's going to do with it, but it would be a nice feature to add to iTunes. Let's not add any.
Well, they've also, I mean, they're still rolling out the podcast analytics, and this could also play into that.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch more data.
You've heard a podcast and you go, when did they talk about this?
About that? Right.
Being able to search for something and just, it doesn't have to be, it can be 85% accurate and still find.
What was that $1,000 thing Alex recommended? Oh, there's 900 of them.
Exactly. Well, it could also, I mean, with a little AI, it could auto chapter.
There's a lot of valuable things. The problem is Apple often acquires technologies and they use a little bit of it, or maybe they just wanted the engineering team and you don't see it necessarily incorporated into
it. We'll see it soon. You know, a lot of times what we now saw in the iPhone 10 with the facial, you know, the Animojis,
right.
That was, you know, 2 years ago that they bought the company.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Ireland and Apple have done a deal. Remember, the EU said, hey, Ireland, you owe us $13 billion in euros, uncollected back taxes from Apple. Ireland obviously doesn't want to pay that, so they went to Apple, and Apple has agreed to fund an escrow fund to put $15.46 billion in back taxes in an escrow fund pending appeals.
I don't think the EU didn't say that Ireland owed them the money, did it? It just said that they had to collect on it. Because it's,
I think they. I my they, memory I is they said you better give it to us.
No, I think you better get it. I believe the EU just said
we're going to fine you.
But I think the EU is telling Ireland that it has to collect that money because otherwise it creates an unfair playing field for European countries.
Yeah,
but I don't think the EU is
right.
asking for the money.
In its 2016 decision, the European Commission said tax arrangements that Ireland offered Apple in 1991 and 2007. Allowed Apple to pay annual tax rates of, get this, between 0.005% and 1% on its profits for a decade. The commission had given Ireland until January 3rd of 2017 to recover the money.
So I think the ultimate, like, see, Ireland doesn't want the money because they want their relationship with Apple.
Right.
They said, we don't want the money. And this is the EU said, you have to take the money. And then I don't want the money. And Apple doesn't, you know, obviously want to pay the money.
Well, Apple's moved away from the Irish, the double Irish, and to a new system to avoid taxation.
So I think that Ireland, in the biggest way to just get back at the EU, should take that money and build.
Pay them in pennies.
No. Because they don't have to pay it. It's their money. It's Ireland's money. So the Ireland should take that money. And they should invest it into training centers that train in Swift all over the country to make Ireland, like, you got $15 billion.
Yeah, there's a way to do that.
So, I thought you were going to say invest them in Bitcoin.
No. But they should do it as they could take that money and they could make Ireland like the center of, you know, every school, every, you know, Ireland's not a very big country. I mean, they could actually cover.
They could build their own EU with that money. Just build a second EU Brussels.
But they could build this whole like Apple development thing inside of Ireland with that money. They won't do it. They'll spend it on roads.
They'll
spend it on reasonable things.
EU
like
also said that that Luxembourg did the same thing for Amazon and owes $294 million. Amazon owes them
$13 billion.
That's a lot of money.
Build a couple cities with that. I mean, it's exciting.
So right now they don't have access to it. It's in an escrow account. Both Apple and Ireland are appealing.
It'll take years.
Well, as soon as Ireland comes to base, they get the money as long as they go to high school, right?
Yeah, I don't think an appeal is going to hold much water. It's pretty clear
the
EU
is a very
they're not going to bend on this
definite point of view.
Yeah. So I think that money is shot.
They're also very, very well invested in making sure that no one of their states can become a favorable tax haven compared to the rest of them.
I think that's what's going on, right? They don't want it.
So if there are laws that says that Ireland has to collect these taxes, but Ireland's saying, nope, we're cool. Any company who doesn't want to pay what they owe us, that's fine with us. That puts them at a really serious advantage to all the other countries in the EU.
I loved the Register's headline, "The sun rose, you woke up, and Qualcomm sued Apple three times."
Yep.
Qualcomm is suing three more lawsuits pertaining to 16 additional patents they say Apple is using in its iPhones. And then, of course, Apple's countersuing over other things. And I think we concluded last time it's a negotiating strategy tactic. Maybe not the friendliest negotiating tactic, but
Qualcomm wants to make their own modems, and this is a way to soften the ground.
And Qualcomm's filing, they actually quote Steve Jobs, 1994, when he said, Picasso had a saying, good artists copy, great artists steal, and we have always been shameless about stealing great ideas. That's a little bit of a smoking gun.
That's daring. That's a way to go, definitely.
Well, can you keep in mind that Picasso did not run a photocopy machine. He was talking about artists draw inspiration.
Yeah, but Jobs says specifically, we've always been shameless, we being Apple, about stealing great ideas. I don't think he meant stealing patents, but maybe he did.
No, it's sort of like making the Mac after looking at the Xerox PARC machine. It's
and they paid Xerox.
There's the famous when the Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were having that argument over Windows, like where Jobs like you stole like Windows from Apple, and Bill says, as far as we're concerned, we stole your TV after you stole it from Park or something close to that.
Apple is going to stop accepting 32-bit Mac apps. They did that, of course, with iOS 11 on the iOS platform, and now the same thing will happen starting January 1st. So if you've got a 32-bit Mac app that's still on the Apple Store, it might be time to update that. How hard can that be? It's mostly abandoned apps that are going to be lost, right?
Well, but the only thing that I think might affect people is that sometimes you have old hardware that works just fine. We're talking about like a document scanner or an industrial piece of equipment that requires a piece of software that you paid someone to write for you like 8 or 9 years ago. And the thing works perfectly fine. But now that you're going to have to choose between having all the security updates of a modern Mac or a modern Mac that will not even run an old version of the operating system, and being able to still use this document scanner or this industrial process or this scientific test equipment. So it can be a really painful thing for people that have not been updating esoteric hardware on a frequent basis.
Now, of course, this
like
just
the
means
Rosetta and the Carbon, right, when they abandoned Rosetta and Carbon. And you hear Rich Siegel talk about how he's moved BB Edit from every era of the Mac.
The same thing. I mean, this, of course, you could download it. You don't have to get it in the Mac store. But Apple does say this is the last Mac OS release to support, and I don't know what this means, to support 32-bit apps without compromise. Doesn't mean they won't support it in going forward. But this happened. Remember that when you loaded a 32-bit app on iOS 10, it said, oh, you better tell the developer this is good. This could slow down your iPad, which it didn't. What they should really say in that message is this app's going to stop working on the next version of iOS. But I wish they had been a little clearer about that. Anyway, that's the warning now. We don't know what will happen in the next version of Mac OS, but there'll be some sort of compromise. Don't know what that
is. Maybe it's emulating it. It takes a small performance hit.
Could be emulators. Could be that certain frameworks will not work anymore because they're just not interested in keeping you compatible. Yeah. A lot of bad stuff can happen. So when I hear about problems like this, usually the reports I hear back are from education, medicine, and science research. Because again, a lot of these organizations are using custom built software, even custom built hardware, to get things done. And now all of a sudden, the system that they use to run a train system has to be is going to have to live with a bad vulnerability
I don't think it won't run at all. I think it won't run in the App Store. So I think they just won't let you sell
maybe
it. So if you're building your own, I think you're fine. I think you just can't.
But it's. So there's that one thing, there's one sanction. You can't get it into the App Store. But they do say 32-bit apps will run with some
sort
of compromise.
I bet you they're going to wrap it into an emulator, and so then it's going to be probably half the speed.
Okay, we don't know.
Oh no, Well, if I'm running a 68040 processor, I'm kind of used to.
Yeah, exactly.
the slow cookery contemplation.
Our show today brought to you by Video Blocks from Storyblocks. This is another product we are happy to use. We used to spend hundreds of dollars a month on royalty-free images and video clips and After Effects templates, things like that, till we found Video Blocks. $149 a year for unlimited stock media, including 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, 400,000 images, all the stock media you need. They have After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and you also get, all that content is royalty-free. You can use it for commercial or personal projects. Once you download it, it's yours to keep and use forever. $149 a year, but there's more. They have a marketplace, which I love. This is really nice. This allows creators to sell directly to you, and they keep 100% of the money. but you will get discounts as a member. That's 5 million additional marketplace clips. So if you're doing, I mean, any kind of video, if you need a helicopter view of San Francisco at sunset, if you need motion backgrounds for your lower thirds or whatever, use VideoBlocks. That's what we've been using. No more footage with an ugly watermark. That should never happen. No older, outdated footage. Join the 90,000 customers, including NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. I've actually kind of made it a habit now to watch the credits at the end. They'll often say, additional material provided by VideoBlocks, and I know what that means. VideoBlocks. Save yourself time, effort, save yourself a lot of money. VideoBlocks.com/MacBreak, $149 a year, unlimited. One flat rate. That's the way to do it.
It's amazing. They have it's not just video. They have After Effects templates. So they're like, you're looking at it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really not worth trying to recreate the wheel most of the time. Like we use this stuff all the time.
Anthony loves this because we're always saying, Anthony, we need a new motion background for the holidays or whatever. Yeah. VideoBlocks comes from StoryBlocks, and it's available right now at videoblocks.com/MacBreak. Great price. Let's see. Lots of stuff here. There's a lot of little stories here we'll go through. Where was it? Oh, yeah, here it is. Tim Cook says 1.8 million developers in China. 1.8 million developers in China, and Apple has paid out, what was the number? I'm trying to find
17?
It. Some huge number. Am I looking at the wrong story?
$16.9 billion.
Whoa. There he is. $17 billion from the Chinese.
That's a lot of dim sum.
That's a lot of dim sum. 25% of total global app store earnings coming out of China. And this is why it's such an important market, isn't it? Because if they've paid $17 billion, that means Apple's made what, $3 or $4 billion?
Five.
That's right, $5 billion.
Yep.
Not
a little
bad.
More than five. Five and some change.
From China,
but it's not
App
changed,
Store
it's
alone. Yeah. That's a lot of pennies.
Yeah.
It's a two-way street because Apple obviously wants to be in China, benefits from China, but Apple's an important brand in China. So I think Tim is using some of that leverage to encourage China to maybe open up a little bit.
Well, I mean, Apple hasn't
made
their hardware available any more to China than any more than they have in the United States. In fact, this is one of the big reasons that Apple fights the U.S. requirements for
they don't want it to have to do it for others. Yeah,
as soon as they help the FBI, they're going to have to help the Chinese government. Like it is, you know, they won't be able to get past that.
Tim was at a conference. It's funny because the headline from Bloomberg says China promotes censorship at this conference. Tim Cook speaks at China event that promotes censored internet. But Tim said the theme of this conference, developing a digital economy for openness and shared benefits, is a vision we at Apple
share. I mean, you can debate the policy or not, but Apple is pretty consistent about they believe that they have to engage, that they cannot affect change if they don't engage. And I know people have different opinions on that. Some people think that you're reinforcing it if you engage. Some people believe that it's better if you starve them out. But everywhere in the world that Apple possibly can, they try to stay engaged and move things in the direction that they want. It's just what Tim Cook's Apple believes is the right thing to do.
Google, interestingly enough, was also at this Wujian conference. Yeah. And Google, as you know, has taken kind of the opposite road. Like, we're not going to deal in China. We're not gonna
It's harder when you're a service. Like Apple's had some of their services blocked as well. It's easier to sell atoms than it is to stream bits in China.
I
think this is going to be a really big problem for Apple in the future, maybe even the near future, because China, they are putting journalists in jail. China is earlier this year, someone named a species of beetle after their leader, and they try to have all that scrubbed because it's an aggressive form of beetle. They're trying to create support for they've mentioned about a idea about having a every citizen on the internet has to be identified. They have to use their real names, and also developing a sort of a social rank for each one of them. And that's, we're not just talking about, oh no, you didn't post Nazi things, you didn't attack people on the internet. We're also including things like, how loyal are you to the party? How have you been visiting sites that we regard as a threat to the current leadership? And that sort of stuff can affect your ability to get housing, to get medical stuff. And all this, a lot of this stuff is going to require devices and services to support whatever protocols, whatever APIs they're going to need to support it. There's going to be a time when Apple is going to have to say, we are perfectly fine. We really want to sell apps. We really want to sell iPhones in your country. Whatever you want to do to your journalists, whatever you want to do to your citizens, we are perfectly cool. We will help you out with that. Or they're going to have to say, no, you're going to have to stick it. This is a little bit worrying, the speech that he gave, because you know for a fact that he gave the keynote, and you know for a fact that that had to be screened carefully before he was allowed to give that presentation. And he didn't say anything. There were words that were carefully chosen that basically said that we are partners with China. There was a tacit support for what China is doing, and that there is room for Apple's point of view and China's point of view in the same marketplace. But at the same time, China was giving their own keynotes there and talking about how we will never allow the internet to create a situation that will harm China. And by China, they're talking about the leadership and the party. So I'm not willing to vilify Apple for participating in this. I'm just saying that as much as I respect the point of view that you have to work, you have to start off by trying to work with an opposing force or a government to see if you can influence them positively. But there is going to be a point at which you're going to have to tell them to go stick it. And I want this point to happen before Apple decides that this is way too big a market, because at that point, I'm not going to believe them when they say that we think that we can affect positive change from within. I'm going to start to suspect that they just don't want to say no to all the money they're making in a market, and they don't want to say goodbye to they don't want to lose sales to Huawei and other actual Chinese manufacturers at this point. It's a very, very tricky line, and they can't try to play both sides of the fence.
It's interesting. This kind of mirrors the way we deal with North Korea. I think that it is better to be in conversation than to be at odds. And yeah, and to recognize that China's interests, you know, are specifically for China's needs. You say it's to support the Communist Party and the Politburo. But I think that I think it's become clear as China makes this gradual turn towards capitalism and openness, that the leadership there, and I'm not sure about the new premier, but the leadership there understands that it would, and it would even like to have an open society, but is worried about the risks of such a thing. They talk about cybersecurity and so forth, and I think that the best way to do that is to help them understand the value of openness. In terms of,
I think that's what Tim Cook's trying to do. They're not going to change. They've been doing the general secretary is not a moral leader, and he's not a cult of personality by any stretch. But no, again, it's not a situation like that. But nonetheless, the fact that you can quash something on the internet that might be interpreted as that this is a Xi Jinping. I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing his name. I read about him, but I don't
Xi
hear
Jinping.
People talk about
yeah.
Xi Jinping. Xi Jinping. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. But yeah, it's the fact that they would want to censor something innocuous like someone named a beetle after him. That, and I know there are more dimensions of that, but that's the sort of thing that a more open society would shrug off. I don't think that they want to become more open. I think that they want to continue their current system, but while acknowledging that the internet is going to make that much, much more difficult. And they're not going to answer to that by becoming more open. I think they're going to answer to that by creating more technological solutions that allow them to control what happens, what their citizens do with the internet within their own borders, and even to some extent outside of their own borders.
I do. Tim Cook should not have done the keynote at the WIC?
I think that he should have used that opportunity. I have to guess that his words were screened by outside parties and he was allowed to say what he wants to say. I think his delivering the keynote is problematic in that the entire conference, this internet conference they hosted, gives credibility to the Chinese government's point of view on what can happen to the internet in China, what they're allowed to do. I do think that if it means that he can have meaningful talks with party leadership about what they can expect from their partners and what they certainly can expect from their partners. We're not, because we got to hear the keynote, but we didn't get to hear about any of the conversations behind the scenes that led up to it or followed it. I don't think at this point it was a bad thing for him to have done. But like I said, there's going to have to be a time where Apple makes it really, really clear that there is a line somewhere we will not cross. And if they and we are willing to abandon this market, if they ask us to do something that is against our principles and the principles of our users worldwide.
Well said. Apple has classified the Mac Minis released through mid-2011 as vintage and obsolete. These are the first Mac Minis.
It's because of the acid wash, Leo.
The bell-bottom Mac from now on.
They're the first with a Thunderbolt port, the first without optical disk drives, but not the most recent Mac Minis. So those are
most recent, quote unquote.
They're getting closer. They haven't updated the Mac Mini in 1,100 days.
Imagine when the last released one is obsolete. That'll be amazing.
Yeah. So what it does, though, it starts the clock ticking. For the 3-year-old, almost 4-year-old Mac Mini, since this 6-year-old Mac Mini has now been obsoleted,
pouring one out for it.
Tim Cook said it's an important part of the product lineup.
Yep,
I hope he means it. I think we're going to see new Macs next year. We're going to see, I hope, sometime this month, the iMac Pro.
Yep,
and then maybe a new Mac. We know I'm at new Mac Pro in 2018, and maybe a new Mac Mini.
I want a new Mac Mini. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to see an important product. Yeah, I mean, I think that we use a lot of Mac Minis. They're just great glue for us. You know, I don't think we use them as a regular.
Would you buy today the most recent Mac Mini, which is three years out of date?
Yes.
I mean, just because it's still useful.
So we rack them. So when they're, you know, a lot of them are, and they're like kind of the other thing that I've used them for in the past is basically an Apple TV on steroids. You know, like it's just like a, you know, you throw it in, connect it to your TV, and now you've really got a full on computer. In fact, that was the first use I had for the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini was just, I want to have all my video and everything else. And I don't, you know, I want more than what my Apple TV provides, and it works great that way. So, for what we use them for, they've been, even going back to 2011, they do what I need them to do. I mean, I'm not expecting them to be a high-performance machine. I'm expecting them to do relatively straightforward actions.
For general users, I wouldn't recommend buying one because only two things are possible in my mind. Either Apple is going to come up with something to replace the Mac Mini, and it's going to be so much better than something that's that old, or Apple is never going to do anything with a Mac Mini ever again, which means that maybe this is an opportunity to think about other little computers that cost not so much money that can take the place of a Mac Mini that maybe don't run the Macintosh operating system, or even switching to an iMac for that situation. I just don't think there's a lot of real return there because it's. I think it's so important because it's you don't know what you're going to use a computer for. Even when you think you know why you're buying it, you think that you're buying this Mac Mini because you need a good desktop computer because you don't want to do what I did and keep your MacBook plugged into the desk for so long that it kills the battery because it never gets a chance to discharge. But then you find out that actually you needed a small computer for this other room in the house or something that you can actually throw into a suitcase if you had to, or you have upgraded to something else. And you've decided that it would be nice to have a Mac Mini in the living room that's running Plex and running a media server and can run games on the big TV. And that's the sort of flexibility that you can get with a headless Mac. I don't think the Mac would be quite as good an ecosystem if it did not have something in the lineup to take the place of a Mac Mini. So I think that if Apple doesn't come up with something to replace to either upgrade or replace the Mac Mini in another year, I'm going to be so worried about the future of the Macintosh. I'm worried already, but if they don't come up with something new for the Mac Mini in the next 12 months, I'm going to start really believing that somewhere in Cupertino there is a date circled on a calendar as EOL for the entire Mac line. Excuse me, the entire consumer Mac line.
I mean, for what we use, if Apple opened up the Apple TV slightly, we would be able to use Apple TVs to do what we do.
Interesting.
You know, like it wouldn't. You know, it's you know,
Coffee Lake is an eighth generation Intel processor. They're still selling the fourth generation dual core i7 in here for $1,000 bucks. I might add.
Bumps. I mean, I don't think you buy it.
Not even spec bumps. Not just this is a 4 year old or four generation old processor.
If I can understand them not replacing it until they really have a strong opinion about what to replace it with, but I just don't understand no spec bumps.
Yeah.
It's terrible because remember that when they upgrade processors, it's not just a faster processor. You get things like encryption and decryption happening on the CPU. You get things like video transcoding happening on the CPU. You get things like low power states on the CPU. Intel builds these things to take as much of the load off the operating system as possible to make it as 2017 a computer as you can build around the CPU. So when you're using it with earlier generation CPUs, it might benchmark as the same, but it's not going to be the same computer. And that's why you start when I'm at someone else's house and they're showing me their Intel Nook and the NUC computer, and I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if my Mac could do that? Mm-hmm. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if my Mac Mini was that power non-hungry? And it's like, oh, please don't make me get another Windows machine. Please don't.
I do think that, and I think that it does come down to, I mean, there are some incredible PCs now that you can buy on a board that are, I mean, I'm kind of amazed. I mean, you can do all kinds of high-end
stuff. I just wish you could run Mac OS on them.
Exactly. I mean, this gets back into me wishing that Apple would let the OS, you know, let
it fly
OS 10
free.
Let it go. It would revolutionize all these little computers that are like $250, and you could suddenly throw it on there. And you know, I think that because it's such a small part of Apple's, you know, income, and they'd still make the standard. I mean, people like us would still buy. Well, I wouldn't. I'd buy because I would want to buy beefy computers that I have five, you know, GPUs in and everything else, and then throw the Mac on it. I mean, that would be cool. But we have Linux and Windows for that.
Uh-oh.
We're being played off. So thank you to my agent. Thank you to my...
We dedicate this to the Mac OS.
Let's make sure we talk over this so we don't get a YouTube takedown. I'll notice on it.
Sing along, as we say.
Sure, we're learning. This is educational.
Let it
keep
go.
It in. Heaven knows I tried. Don't let them in. Don't let them see. Be the good girl.
This episode of Mac Break Glee is brought to you by...
And chill. Don't feel. Don't let them go.
Everybody sing along.
Well, now they know.
Let it go.
Let it go. Let it go. Can't hold it back anymore.
I'm sorry. And to all the parents who've heard that song one time too many.
I have no children. I've never times. Heard that song all the
I
way
apologize.
Through.
Or even the uncles who've heard that song one time.
Yeah.
Okay. thank goodness my
Well, Idina Menzel just sings. She sings that loud enough for Andy to hear almost every opera. So.
According to KGI Securities, Ming-Chi Kuo again, Apple will ship 25 million AirPods in 2018. That's double its 2017 sales. Again, this is complete speculation. We don't know what Apple has sold.
He's there at the supply chain. He's counting them, Leo.
Yeah.
He's counting them as they come off the line.
It has been, can you get an AirPods today by going to the store? I mean,
was a week last week. When I checked last week, it was about a week. But some stores have them in stock. You can go to some stores and just get them.
Now having tried pretty much every Bluetooth headphone, including the horrible Google earbuds.
Yeah.
That Apple did something magical with the AirPod.
And what's interesting is that because of Beats, and I don't think Apple's really taken advantage of it yet, but because of Beats, Apple could be, you know, keep the W1 to themselves and just keep on putting out. I mean, I would really prefer Apple to give us a couple more choices. I know Beats has one that is
got
the
cable. Even just different
sizes.
You know? Yeah.
Well, Beats has the over-the-ear, they have the noise-canceling, they have the around-the-ear, and they have the in-ear, and then the around-the-neck.
Everybody's ear canals are
Those are all W1s, though? Those are all wireless?
Yep.
Okay, then I missed.
So you do have Beats choices.
Okay, yeah.
These are the Jabra Elites. These are for sport, for runners. But they're very similar. It's got a case. It's got a Bluetooth headset in it. But these come with three different sizes of, buds that you put in your ear, plus three different sizes of the little inserts that go in your ear to hold it in. They really hold in well. But what's interesting about these, they work much like the AirPods. The sound quality is actually much better than the AirPods, and they're less expensive. But they do heart rate, and they will do coaching. So if you're a runner, you could put these in your ear and it will tell you what your heart rate is. It will say you're at max, you're below max, you need to run harder. You need to run. And in fact, when you first install it, you have to change the earbuds and the inserts until you get a good fit and it can measure your heart rate. They say, stand still. Okay, that worked. Now run around, jiggle your head. Let's make sure we can do it. And then they want to do a VO2 max. So these things have some really interesting sensors in here. I would like to see Apple, you know, this is Jabra. I think Apple, there's the technology exists. Apple could do a little more health sensing in those AirPods. I hope that next year will bring not just, you know, sales of the existing AirPods, but new models of AirPods.
It's interesting, too, because there's an AR path where they can, because audio AR is probably more advanced than video AR right now. And there's a lot that Apple could do with it. But there's also the like health aspect that you mentioned. And it'd be interesting because Jeff Williams doesn't just run watch at Apple. He runs all of health. And there's probably a lot of stuff that they're playing with.
Well, and I think my thing is with the Beats ones is that they don't make any ones that aren't connected, which drives me crazy. Like,
these are not connected. These
I know those aren't, but those aren't yeah. W1. Like, that's
well. But, you know, W1 doesn't make that. Once you pair them, it's no different. It's the same. It doesn't. They have a Jabra app. It uses Bluetooth LE to tell it the battery level.
Right.
I mean, you have, I don't know. I feel like, and these are less expensive. I think the quality of the sound is much, much better, too, especially if you get the inserts right. My only problem is I'm not a runner, so. This also has something that the AirPods don't have, hear through. So these seal much better than the AirPods, and you can push a button that gives you background noise as well. I just feel like they could do better. This stuff exists; it's out there. I don't know why Jabra doesn't put the W1 in, but these were $249, but yeah, the Elite Sport. But I was able to get them at $149. I guess that deal is off now. Yeah,
it must have been the cyber.
Yeah, that was their Black Friday deal. So $149 was a great deal.
And does it come with all the inserts?
Yeah. So that's the only negative. You have to spend some time matching the inserts to your ears to get the perfect fit.
But once you do, you want to have the perfect fit.
I know. Once you do, it's amazing. These things, they're as good as molded headphones. I can dance around. Run around.
And, you know, Apple, I think Apple is
well-tested.
I wish Dalrymple was here to give you music to track by.
And they don't fall out. And actually, they don't look as dopey as the AirPods. You know what I haven't tested is the microphone, because it doesn't have anything coming out of your ears.
Leo, there's no real degree of dopiness when you have giant bits of plastic shoved in your ears.
It just looks like I have gauges in my ear canals, that's all.
It looks like you have those, what are those big loops that they put, kids are wearing? Yeah, is that what they are?
I look like one of the kids. I love the sound quality of this. The bass is amazing. It really points up where Apple could have done perhaps a little bit better with the AirPods. Not to knock the AirPods, you're right. I mean, everything that the AirPods is great.
Yeah.
I got these two. What I would love to see, though, is what Google did with the Google Buds, the earbuds. I would like to see Apple do. The earbuds, as you're walking around, if you get a notification, say, you got a notification. Would you like me to read it to you? Yes. Would you like me to reply? Yes. You could do all of that. That's the augmented reality I'd like to see in Apple's AirPods. That is amazing.
That stuff works extremely. I'm not talking about the Google's product. I'm talking about the concept works extremely well. It's something that you kind of wish, you kind of wonder why it hasn't happened 2 or 3 years ago, because we have all these assistants and it should be able to do more than just do a tap and then ask a question. It really should. You really should have the ability to tell it, please do interrupt me for certain things because I just want to be taking a walk, but still not missing out on the house that I put a bid on because I was taking a walk instead of sitting by the phone.
I talked about this on Twit on Sunday, and I wanted to ask you, Renee, about Elcomsoft's post, the iOS 11 horror story, the rise and fall of iOS security. And if I can bottom line it, it's just they've made some changes, particularly to the encryption password when you restore an iPhone or an iPad, that favor convenience a little bit more and security a little bit less. Would you agree, or is that not the case?
No, absolutely. There's two areas. One is the iTunes encrypted password, because some people were saying, I saw on the internet it's a good idea to encrypt it, or I want to do a quick setup and I know it'll bring passwords while I encrypt it, and then add a password quickly, never remember it, and because the passcode is stored on the device, it's not as simple as switching a computer. It's very hard to make another backup after that. And also a lot of people were just, there's so many passwords now, they were continuously forgetting their Apple ID because they made it a better password or something. And so what Apple did is with iOS 7 and the iPhone 5S, Apple went to what Steve Gibson called a crypto brick. They made it incredibly secure, but they started running into problems. And this is that classic debate that I have to credit Dave Nanian for giving me sympathy towards. Originally, I was like, no, security, Uber, everything. Like, just make it more secure. And Dave stopped me and said, wait a minute. For most human beings, they're not worried about their photos being stolen. They're worried about losing their photos or losing access to their photos.
Yeah, we're not all under investigation by the FBI.
No. So the changes here are entirely towards data preservation. You can have fail safe or you can have fail secure. And Apple previously, everything was fail secure. Now they've made several specific things fail safe so that you could, there's a better chance to recover. I was thinking that maybe I preferred, like, for example, you can use passcode to unlock your Apple ID. And Elcomsoft was panicking, saying, that gives you the keys to everything. But if you have physical access to somebody's iPhone and their passcode, you can already go in, access their email, access their SMS, get tokens, reset their – you have the keys to the kingdom. So this is just a slightly more convenient way for people to do those resets. And then I realized that I use a password instead of a passcode anyway, so I wouldn't even bother turning it off because no one's going to get my – like, it's really hard to get a passcode. Ask the FBI in San Bernardino. But to get a strong password, like Andy was talking about a couple weeks ago, there's just – unless a nation state is after you, you're probably
– And so what Elcomsoft says, and I think that this is great advice regardless, is because now your passcode is that single barrier – make sure it's at least the 6-digit passcode. Yeah. And really, we should all do what you do, Renee, which is to use a password. The problem is you got to enter it. And especially with Face ID, I find myself entering my passcode a lot.
Yeah. And also there's mobile device, there's mobile device management that you can do. And like for some people, it's an enterprise thing, but Apple also has iOS Configurator in the Mac App Store. And if you're sophisticated enough to worry about this, you can probably download that and just play around with the settings and put it more to your
liking. So you could make it more secure, in other words, if you wanted
to. Yeah. I mean, you can remove all sorts of the ability. Like you can remove the ability for people to change all sorts of things.
Well, what I would suggest is, you know, at least have a 6-digit passcode and consider having a password.
My kids' iPads are over secure. Like as a parent, if I put them underneath my thing, I feel like I should be able to log in and reset their password because they of course what they did is my
kids forget it all the time.
Well, my son was looking at my daughter's iPad
because resets the password.
So he changed the passcode and then he forgot it.
Yeah. Every time.
Rich Mogul, who's a really good security expert, he wrote an article for Tidbits the other day on the same topic. And he said, you know, as a security guy, and this is how I feel too, I don't like intellectually, I don't like some of these changes, but he had locked himself out of his daughter's iPad because he set it up and then did something else and didn't back it up and did this. And you at some point you have to realize that humans are on the other end of it and you have to try and get the best balance.
They've been sitting there on my couch for 6 months waiting for me to go to the Apple store to get them reset. Like I was just like, because there's no other way to do it.
We have an iPad on our kitchen table. Like, same thing. I got to bring it to the Apple store.
And I'm like, when am I going to have time to take it to the Apple store?
You mentioned this, Renee, in passing. There was a little flaw in iOS 11.2 that if you had notifications turned on for certain third-party apps on December 2nd, boom.
it was iOS 11.1, and what happened was
it wasn't
11.2 the calendaring system, which we've seen before. We've seen like daylight savings time bugs, and we've seen some other bugs like year, like capital Y, lowercase y year problems. But with this one, because of this error, local notifications would just send over and over again, fill up memory and crash Springboard.
Is that so what happened? It was a Springboard crash.
Yeah, it would, most people can't tell the difference.
Right.
It's because it looks like it's spinning and coming back at you. So like it's real. Whether the phone actually turns off or on, it's impenetrable to most people. Right. So Springboard would crash. And then depending on how often you had local notifications, and people are confused by this too. They're remote notifications, which is like Facebook Messenger, Twitter, sports scores, things are coming off the internet. Local notifications are like your meditation app reminding you to meditate. If you have like Do or a multiple to-do list app reminding you, it's things that originate from on your device that's being sent to you. Those would crash. And you could either set back the date, which had a lot of issues associated with it because that breaks a lot of things, or you could go through and sort of laboriously turn off. If you know what are local notifications, it was quick. But if you didn't, you'd have to turn off a bunch of stuff because Do Not Disturb didn't work. Do Not Disturb does not stop notifications. It just mutes the dialogue. So you'd still have the error. And then Apple, again, moved really quickly. They could have branched 11.1 and tested it and put out an update. But instead, since 11.2 was ready to go, the Gold Master had already shipped earlier that day, they just pushed it out immediately on very early Saturday morning.
11.2 also adds Apple Pay in messaging. I've tried it. Somebody sent me $5. I sent it back. It worked great.
Nice.
If you have Apple Pay already set up, you have to go through one extra step to turn it on for messages. And actually, it seemed like I just pressed a button and it was working. So,
and there's no, if you're using Apple Pay Cash or you're using a bank card, there's no transaction fee. If you're using your credit card, there's a standard, I think, 3% transaction fee.
Yeah. So I like that. And, I didn't want to take the $5. I just considered it a test, a proof of concept. And I
returned. You can send it back.
I did.
That's cool.
It was, so we saw that it worked both ways.
The minute this was announced, Georgia just sent me $5, $5, $5, $5 in a text. Luckily, that doesn't work. You have to enable it.
That's terrible.
I know.
Did she know what she was doing, or she was teasing?
She absolutely knew. I don't think she thought it would work, but you know.
And when you get the money, it's in like an Apple account now, right?
Apple Pay Cash. It's like a buffer, so that there's no transaction fees on that, so you can sort of withdraw that if you want to.
You'll be doing it, or you can buy apps or whatever. Yeah,
it's like your PayPal.
Like a buffer. Yeah.
But you can pay other people cash. You can pay use Apple Pay to pay at retailers, or you can buy it on Apple. You know, whatever. And I guess you could pull it out if you needed to, right? And to turn it into real cash.
And now I think I can update my watch to do the same, right?
I haven't seen if the watch – I wasn't paying attention, but the watch update wasn't out this morning yet. It was all supposed to come out this week. It's just the iOS 11.2 came out early. Apple neglected to update the release notes to say that Apple Pay Cash – because it was supposed to all come out together. But it went out early. They neglected to update it. So everyone's like, where's my Apple Pay Cash, dude? And so we've had to wait a few days for it.
Let me just look on my watch here and see if – there's an update, software update, checking for update. And the survey says, I think it's out, but I'm waiting to see.
It would be 4.2.
It's still thinking about 4.2. And then that would allow me to use my watch to send money to.
Yeah, and you can use Messages or Siri. You can use either one.
And can I just add money to my Apple Wallet, or how does that work?
No. So when people send you money, it goes in there. And I think you can add iTunes cards, but I'm not positive. Oh, I can't actually test it because my phone is set to U.S.
Yeah.
But it said I had to confirm with a U.S. financial institution, which was definitely
I just want to point out that when you think about progress.
Yes.
It's 30 years ago, you could not get cash on Sunday. And now you can send people cash from your
watch.
It's
amazing. I know. Yeah. Isn't that awesome?
You know.
So there is. So I am getting update 4.2, 177 megabytes, new features, improvements, and bug fixes. All right. So we're going to let that run. It's going to take 43 minutes. This show is not going to take 43 minutes. I like this. I've mentioned before AliveCore. This is Vic Gundotra's new company. This is a company that made the first FDA-certified EKG. You just hold in your hand and you could use your iPhone or your Android phone and you could send it to your doctor. Now they have an FDA certified Apple Watch band. AliveCore's Cardia band is an EKG meter in your watch band. How about that? This is particularly useful for people who have AFib because they, you know, that's a kind of a silent killer. You may not know. So if
it hits all ages, I mean, we have someone that has worked with us that had it, and he had way more healthy than me and had a heart attack.
Yep.
It's
Jeff Jarvis told us about this because he's been in the hospital for arterial fibrillation. And so this is something you can have, and you put it in your band, and then whenever you want, you can put your thumb on it and take an EKG, send it to their doctors or send it to your doctor for a fee.
Now, does that use that secret port on the band margin, or does it use like a Bluetooth LTE?
That's an interesting question. The other one is Bluetooth.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any physical connection. So I would guess it's continuing to use Bluetooth. It's just a more convenient form factor.
It'd be interesting if you have these sort of smart watches for extra sensors that doesn't need to have their own battery, doesn't need to worry about pairing or anything like that. That really does show how, if that's true, it really show how forward looking the design is.
Yeah. See how it works.
That's day one.
And then, it would net. Oh, wow. It also monitors to let you know if unexpected heart rate conditions. So that is a big step forward. Since you're wearing it all the time, it can keep an eye and say, hey, you may be going into AFib You know, wow.
What's interesting about all of this stuff is that as the sensors, and they've already talked about the fact that the sensors can see a lot of things, high blood pressure, sleep apnea. Those are all things that the sensors, as they are already 96%. And as you start talking about, this is when Apple talked about randomizing your information. As Apple gets all that information in a randomized form, not specifically to you, but to an overall view of things, their ability to see things about you is going to be pretty profound as far as that goes. And then everyone will really realize that they shouldn't eat anything with corn syrup.
Yeah.
Is that corn syrup
the cause of arterial fibrillation?
No, it's not the cause of arterial, but I'm just telling you that as we use these things, we're going to realize that corn syrup is as bad as they say it is, and we should not have it in our
food. Well, we know that. $199, although the chat room saying if you're in the Stop AFib community in the U.S., you can get a 25% discount with the code STOPAFib25. So that makes it even more affordable. I think this is a big deal, this device. I really think this is interesting.
Absolutely. And I think that everything that I've been seeing is that Apple would be very, very pleased if it in the next 5 years it became as well known as a healthcare company as it is known as, say, a music provider. They don't want anything to make it more well known than as an iPhone seller. But in terms of their second tier products, this is not just, hey, this is a way for us to sell watches. It's like, no, the Apple Watch is a healthcare product, and we want to continue to increase the portfolio of stuff that it can do.
It was a great interview with Jeff Williams on CNBC talking about the Apple HeartCare, heart study app that they're putting out with Stanford and the telemedicine movement. And he just said, we spent almost no time discussing how to monetize health.
Yeah,
it's stuff that they feel deeply about.
You can, after you get the recording, you can then record how you feel as well in an audio and send it off to your doctor. But I think what's most interesting is unexpected heart rate. Would you like to take an EKG showing up on your watch? I think that's really, that's life-saving. At this point,
yeah, it's just the ability to say, well, what if you could just simply have like a flight recorder recording the past 30 minutes of whatever's been going on, where it just keeps looping, and if there is an incident, your first responder can, through Bluetooth, and hopefully you're conscious and can give permission for this, basically say, here is what your heart has been doing for the past 30 minutes, so it knows what triggered it off or what's looking at.
Boy, I tell you, if I had AFib, that'd be a reason to go out and buy an Apple Watch.
But I think even if you think you might be at risk, my father had a heart attack earlier this year, and you know, he just felt bad. You know, like right. He does. But this is the kind of thing that will tell you that you need to go to the hospital.
There's a reason you feel bad. And we do know the sooner you get treatment, the higher your chances of a full recovery. So time is of the essence.
It's not just that, but sometimes people if all of a sudden my heart rate went to 200 beats per minute, I would freak out. I would know that something's very, very wrong. Even if it went back down to normal, like after 10 minutes, I would say the next time I can get the next appointment I can get to have myself checked out, I'm going to do that. But what if for the past 5 years, that's just been happening off and on, and you're sort of used to the, oh, well, it's just something my heart does, whatever. Because you know that this happens every couple of months, and it's startling for about 5 minutes, but then it goes away. You just don't pay attention to that. It would be wonderful if you had a device that tells you this is something you should choose to correct this problem. This is something that you really, really want to have checked out. It's the numbers. It's the deviation from the norm that calls our attention to the fact that this is not something that we can just simply say, oh, well, that's a blip in the system. No, this is something that's been happening to you every 3 to 5 weeks, and this is not normal.
Of course, the danger is once you start measuring it, it starts creating another behavior. You know, like when stationary bikes came out with heart sensors, and I was in high school, we used to have competitions on how far I could get to 212 before I fell off the bike. So it was the stupidest thing. Not the stupidest thing I've ever done. I've done a lot of stupid things, but that was getting up pretty high up there.
But you know what? You're probably a little healthier now.
At the time, my resting heart rate, I was a wrestler. At the time, my resting heart rate was in the high 30s, low 40s. Like 40, really about 42, 43 was about
this where man is dead and my watch has stopped.
But it was, but yeah, it's definitely not that now.
Quick, before we take a break for our picks of the week, Mark Gurman, another scoop. This one, not about Apple, but about Google, YouTube, and Amazon's streaming devices. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, Google pulled YouTube from the Amazon Echo. It's off again. Google has pulled support for its YouTube video service from all of Amazon's streaming media devices, including the Fire TV. Actually, that'll start January 1st. But you can't watch YouTube videos anymore. We really appreciate that feature because you could watch our show on the Echo show
right
by asking for it. That was back briefly, but now Google says it's taking action because YouTube apps on the Amazon products aren't made by Google, like the YouTube app on the iPhone is, mm-hmm. and because Amazon doesn't sell some Google products on its store.
I'm trying to understand. It's not only does Amazon have a YouTube product they shouldn't have, but I don't have an Apple TV product from Amazon I should have.
It's a mess. Okay. I understand why Google's doing it. They said Amazon's implementation of YouTube violates our terms of service, creating a broken user experience. They fixed it in November, but then Amazon pulled Nest devices from their store when they put their own device up.
So would Amazon be happy if Apple just made Prime Video for Apple TV because they didn't?
Well, I just have to say, if Amazon wants to be retailer to the world, they've got to stop these kind of weird anti-competitive practices. This is to sell everything.
This is how you get yourself into an antitrust.
Yeah.
You know, they're not there yet because they don't have enough of the market. But if they continue to go down the path that they're going, you know, eventually it's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah. What's amazing to me is, like, a couple of years ago on this show, we discussed horizontal lock-in versus vertical lock-in. And a lot of people gave us feedback saying, no, that's silly. That'll never happen. Amazon would never do this kind of stuff. And here we are, because any company eventually wants to seek to their own best interest.
Once you own the market. The Apple TV app for Amazon Prime Video was supposed to come out by the end of this year. It's still not out.
Yeah, it was announced at WWDC, and then Amazon actually tweeted out that it was coming, and we still haven't seen it. Some people, every time there's a new Amazon premiere, people are like, this is it. This is when it's finally going to come out. And now Grand Tour is coming out, I think, tomorrow or the next day. So people are hopeful again. But engineers on Reddit have said that it's been done and it's just Amazon has not released it. And it's tvOS apps are, I don't want to speak for developers, but they're ridiculously easy to make. Netflix was there at day one and Amazon
is not clear. Yeah. And what makes it clear is Amazon refuses to sell the Apple TV as well.
Yeah. Because it would be a bad experience because it doesn't have Amazon Prime Video. On it.
and they're really cute too. If you do a an Amazon search for the Google Home, they will take you right to the Echo Dot.
I think Amazon obviously is playing hard. Once you get something into the house, it's really hard to get something else in there. I mean, once people are tied into that, I mean, I have both because we do these.
I have both too, but I use the Echo a lot more.
The Echo's more. It does the responses are tend to be better.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, my kids as soon as the show came out. They just ignore the Google Home doesn't even exist because they sit there and look at the screen and
watch TV.
My kid, I don't even know how to run the Echo. I mean, the show. My kids are sitting there playing games. They're watching movies. They're like,
they know how to use it.
Sitting in this corner in our kitchen,
it's Daddy. A 7-inch TV.
I'm like,
got a big one in the living room. Kids
got a 70-inch over there with surround sound. I mean, you could like, you know, and they're like, well, they couldn't find whatever they're watching easily on the Apple TV. And you know, anyway, it's a long story.
We're going to take a break. Your picks of the week, folks, coming up. But first, a word from Texture. Here's a product that everybody who has an iPhone or an iPad, or for that matter, an Android phone or an Android tablet ought to get: the Texture app. Imagine it's kind of Netflix for magazines. Over 200 of the nation's best magazines for a very low cost, $9.99 a month. That's our special TWIP price. I'll explain that in a second. On your iPad. The next time you take a flight, you don't have to worry about it. You favorite the magazines you want. They'll automatically download. You have every page that's in the current newsstand issue, plus all the back issues, plus features you can't get in print, like video. And by the way, if you're a photographer, you'll love the quality of the images in magazines like Shutterbug and National Geographic. They just look better because they're not screened and printed. They're right there on your iPad. The New Yorker's there. So is Vanity Fair. So is Wired. So is everything you'd want. Bon Appetit and Real Simple if you like to cook. If you are into following the political scene, Time Magazine, The Atlantic. When the cold winter hits, because winter is coming, let Afar and Airbnb Mag take you away and inspire your next vacation. Over 200 premium magazines. And you know what I love about it is I don't have to subscribe to the trade magazines like Billboard that I would normally have to pay a lot of money for. They're right there. They're right there.
This was the end of me getting magazines.
Yes.
I mean, like getting paper magazines.
Why? Why have all the clutter and the guilt? There's guilt associated. When I subscribed to The New Yorker, the weekly, it would pile up and I'd feel bad about it because I didn't read it. And then I'd feel like, well, you got to read the November one before you start the December one. It all goes away with texture.
I travel, and for me to be able to have the magazines, I don't read a whole magazine. I dabble.
Yes.
I want to watch a little
texture
of this.
Texture really facilitates that because they have this curated, you know, new stuff, noteworthy stuff. Here's topics you're interested in,
right.
Magazines you may never have heard of. To get your free texture trial, you see, at People and Us and Entertainment Weekly. See, I don't feel guilty buying those gossip mags. And you don't have enough time these days in the grocery line to really.
You don't want to be seen reading People magazine. You might want to read it. You just don't want to read it.
Well, I do. I got to know.
Just quietly look down at your iPad. And yeah. As far as everyone knows, you're just working.
I got to know. Is Gwen still with what's his name? I got to know.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. Inquiring minds. Find out. To start your free texture trial, go to texture, TEXTURE.com/twit, texture.com/twit. If you choose to continue, listeners will get texture for just $9.99 a month. That's over 30% off their listed price. Texture.com/twit. By the way, great holiday gift, and there are lots of options for holiday gifts if you go to texture.com/twit. I like it. Texture.com/twit. Don't forget, $9.99 a month is a special price. Only available at that address. That's over 30% off their listed price. But take advantage of that. Get something for your family and friends. All right. Time for our picks of the week. Is Soldier of Fortune in there? I don't know. Let me check.
I'm thinking of
a career change.
When I was like 14. My mom would always buy. She also cared about this that we read. So if we went to the bookstore,
pretty
much you could buy whatever you wanted and just hand it to your mom. You know, when I was a kid,
because you're reading,
because we're reading, and she just cared that we just got good at reading. You know, she didn't care what we were reading, and so I remember being home I was 12 years old or 13 years old or whatever. I had Soldier of Fortune magazine that I was reading. And one of my friends said, they're like, did your mom know that you read this? And I was like, she bought it.
Okay. I'm sad to say they do not have either Guns and Ammo or Soldier and Fortune magazine. So don't get texture for that. They do have Sailing World, Saltwater Sportsman, Ski, The Best of Outside, Outdoor Life, Marlin, Flying. They got it's amazing. Boating, biking, backpacker. Maybe I'm looking in the wrong. Maybe I should look in men's interests.
Most gerunds are covered.
Most of the gerunds. Andy Inako, your pick of the week, sir.
What a good pick this week. Daniel Jalka just released a new version of Mars Edit. Mars Edit 4 drops today on Tuesday, as a matter of fact.
I love Mars Edit.
And it's the blogging app that had sort of what is the opposite of a renaissance? It's been around for years and years and years. Daniel bought rights to it 10 years ago. He's an amazing developer. And there was a time when WordPress's own online web-based editor kind of outpaced it a little bit in terms of creature comforts, and there were some features you could do for WordPress blogs inside the online editor you couldn't do in Mars Edit. And in addition to a whole bunch of other really cool features, Mars Edit 4 takes a leap now back, leapfrogging beyond the online editor that WordPress gives you. It's like the difference between an online editor and a desktop app. This is a desktop Mac app. It's much prettier. It's much cleaner. A lot more editing features that you had before that are more familiar to you if you're used to using a word processor. But also a bunch of stuff where things that were a little bit more difficult in previous versions are a lot easier now. More modern WordPress features are supported directly inside the app itself. You no longer have to go in. into the WordPress editor in order to set some things about how you want this deployed and how you want things marked, that sort of stuff. Editing, if you're using Markdown, it will translate Markdown. It will let you type Markdown and basically interpret what you're doing visually on the fly. If you've got custom templates, it will automatically find those templates and make sure you get a WYSIWYG editing experience as you go. Having things like featured images is now something that's built into the app itself. They freshened up the interface to make it look, it used to look kind of 2002-ish, 2003-ish, and now it really looks like a modern app. And one of my favorite features is it's always had the ability to act as, one of the things I liked about the online editor is the ability to edit a post anywhere, because no matter where I log in, it's going to be there. And Mars Editor has always worked where you can edit it locally on your, you can create something locally on your Mac and decide not to put it onto the blog even as a draft. You can, but the way that it works is that it will always maintain your drafts folder as being the same thing between each one. So I can start editing, I can start writing something in Mars Edit, get 3,000 words in, and then go onto the online editor on a Chromebook, for instance, and have it exactly there because it's keeping both things synced. But they think the new twist that they added is the ability to back up your entire WordPress database. So every single post, all these hundreds and hundreds of posts that I put on my blog, it will just simply download it and keep it locally. So if, I can spend my 6-hour flight going through and fixing typos on stuff I've been writing for the past 2 or 3 years. But it also means that if my site goes down or if it gets hit by a bad person trying to be mean to me by taking down my site and ripping apart my WordPress database, all these hundreds of posts that I've written will be safely backed up in Mars Edit on my MacBook. It's $50, but it's a professional piece of software. If your medium of publishing is WordPress or another popular blogging platform, you've really got to have Mars Edit. I'm guessing that you're about to say, well, that's $50, and I think that the online editor I have works just great. You will come to appreciate how much freer you can be when you have the ability to write completely offline and write in an app environment as opposed to an online environment. And plus, it'll give you free for the first 2 weeks. All features are unlocked. It's a demo version. It'll work. It won't ask you for money for 2 weeks, and for those 2 weeks, everything just works. All you do is just give it the URL of your blog. It will pause for a second. It'll ask you what's your username, what's your password, and then it'll just simply start downloading all your posts, and you can post immediately. It's perfect. It's not only a really useful tool, it's one of those beautifully crafted pieces of software where you know that this is some old world craftsman in a shop deep in the woods somewhere, doing nothing but forging swords, doing nothing but binding books. They do this one thing and they just...
Daniel's going to laugh.
I hope so. I mean,
Andy, tell us how you really
feel. He's not going to laugh.
Daniel Jalkut, old world craftsman.
He shipped today, so he's going to be sleeping until at least Friday or Saturday. I'm not going to hear from him until Monday. He has to relearn the name of his wife and his kids.
We love Daniel. He's a great guy. He's been on the show, and I agree with you 100%. And in fact, I'm thrilled to hear that it's out. In fact, the perfect tool on your Mac for blogging would be get that and get the new MyPick Pixelmator Pro, which just came out.
Did it just come out?
Just came out. You can now install that.
Well,
I think it's $60. It's not hugely expensive, right?
Photoshop money.
Yeah. It's not Photoshop money. Yeah, $60. And a whole host of new features. Massive update. We've been waiting for this for a while. It is out. So if you've been waiting, I've used the original Pixelmator forever. And it is a perfect complement to Mars Edit, because you often have an image that you want to resize or get in there as your hero image, and you need a little editor. Pixelmator Pro is a great choice. So the two of them should be on your shopping list this week.
We have like a handful of Photoshop licenses. I have one. We've got maybe four or five other ones in the company because there are a couple of things. People send you a Photoshop file or whatever, and you want to make sure it's compatible. And I've been using Photoshop since 1992, like a little muscle memory issue. But all of the rest of our machines are all Pixelmator. Like, so we basically, you know, unless you really need something that's in Photoshop, we'd rather have you do Pixelmator. It's, to be honest with you, it's faster. You know, a lot of the responsiveness of the, you know, you're able to watch all the plugins in real time. You're able to do all those things. And it
supports RAW, which is great.
Yeah, it's
you
great.
Shoot camera RAW, which I do. And now they say they have some machine learning involved in the enhanced image editing, including automatic naming of descriptive names to your layers.
That's cool.
So there's layer 1, 2, 3, and 4. Automatically straighten images using horizon detection, magically remove objects, recreating image areas with stunning realism. This is something we're starting to see. MacFun's doing that too in Luminar. We're starting to see this get better and better thanks to AI. So, yeah, Pixelmator Pro. Couple of things to buy today. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So first, I want to just echo what Andy said. Jalxy did a heck of a job on this.
Can I call him Jalxy too?
You can. It took me forever to pronounce it properly, but yeah, Jalxy did a heck of a job. Really, really outstanding work. Pixelmator as well. My oldest godson, he went to high school now, and they do, even though it's in Quebec, they're doing Spanish. Each school has a thing. One school does Mandarin, one does Spanish, one does Italian. He went to the one that's doing a Spanish program or testing a Spanish program. So he's been using Duolingo to help him to sort of fortify what he's learning in school. My youngest godson he's still in primary school, so he's using it to help him with French. Their father is of Italian descent, and while he got yelled at a lot in Italian as he was a child, he doesn't speak it fluently, so he's decided to work with them and pick up his Italian. I did 2 years of Mandarin in college, but I haven't used it very much over the last few years. So I started doing, when they joined it again, I started doing the Mandarin course. And there's so many languages now, so many more than what they launched with originally. And the programs are really great. And I was confused at first because I started doing it and it started throwing words at me that it had never explained. And if I had just done that program, like I knew them because I had a very, very, very basic idea from college what the words meant, but it was I was getting everything right. So it was ramping it up. And if I did it wrong, it would be ramping them down. So it was sort of intelligently adjusting to my level. And it does all these things, like it gives you little rewards and it tells you if your strength bar goes down, you should review that course. And it's a really fun way. Before I go to bed, when I woke up, I used to just read Twitter or look at Instagram or check out news.app, all those things. Now I make sure that I start the day with a few minutes, 1 to 3 quick programs on Duolingo, and I finish the day the same way. And it's just, I think that language is the way that we think. And the more languages you know, the more ways to think you know.
We're going to Japan in the spring. I used Duolingo to brush up my French. I don't know any Japanese, but I want to be ready. I have no idea. You're learning hiragana right up front. I don't know why, but I figure I'm going to do this until we go to Japan in April, and maybe I'll.
My kids love it.
Yeah,
it's the best way to learn. They're like 8 and 10, just sitting there fiddling with languages and finding the ones that they like, and it's amazing.
I'm just going to guess. Nope, wrong. It's ni. Okay. See, I gotta learn. Okay, continue. So now I'll know that's ni. What sound does this make? Got that one. I like the little bidding. It just makes you feel good about this. Oh, crap. This was neat. I'm the knights who say neat. Okay, good. See, I'm learning Japanese right just like now. That. Just like that. Wakarimashita, Anjin-san. It is now... Thank you, Renee. Now time for your pick of the week. Alex, Lindsay,
so,
let me get my wallet.
No, this isn't too bad.
Oh, good.
In fact, I think it might be free.
Wow.
So this is how these picks sometimes evolve. So Stu Mashowitz, who I used to work with at ILM, posted something on Twitter. And then I think either Kent Nichols or Brent Schnarr in our company put it in our little internal list in Slack. And then I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. It's called Focus. F-O-C-O-S.
Focus.
Focus. Okay. And what this does is it takes advantage of the depth sensor and lets you play with it.
But only in the, like in a selfie.
Only the ones that you shot in portrait mode.
Oh.
So if you set it in portrait mode and it captures that 3D information, you can change the bokeh. You can play with it, make it sharper, and you can actually play where it's placed as well. So you can look, you can change you know, all those little bits and pieces, and you can actually preview it. You can hit a button and it cuts it and shows you all the slices that were a part of the photo.
So you can fix it.
Well, you can fix it and just seeing it. I think they have there's the slices there. So yeah. You can see that's the slices that the iPhone took as far as depth goes.
Right.
Of figuring stuff out. And you can also see where it's going to have trouble. You can see like in that cat one that's on here that the ears didn't get read very well and everything else.
Can you fix that?
I don't think you can fix that, but you can at least see it.
You'll know where
you can open it in Photoshop and edit the depth map if you really want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you extract the depth map?
Yeah. So in the new version of Photoshop, it will take because there's a depth API now in iOS 11. It'll take the depth API and make it a channel for you, and you can actually go in and edit.
Is that iOS Photoshop?
No, Photoshop on
desktop.
The Mac.
Wow.
Yeah, desktop Photoshop.
I didn't know that. Anyway, this is something you can run on your it literally just finds all your portrait photos immediately. It says, "Can I see the photos?" And it just shows you all of them, and you start playing with it. And I think it's either very inexpensive or free. So I think it's like, you know, there maybe down the road they're going to ask you to upgrade to something else, but it's
really FOCOS by Xiaodong Wang.
It's free.
And it's free.
Cheap at half the price.
Dang. That's a zero, Alex. Dang. Well, we have had fun today, gentlemen, and I thank you all for being here. Renee Ritchie is at imore.com. The Return of the Vector podcast has been hailed as a red letter a day in this century. So everybody must listen.
2017 didn't totally stink. We got that podcast back.
One good thing in 2017. imore.com.
Please remember that when I hit you all up to be guests, please.
imore.com/vector and imore.com for Renee's fabulous work and his colleagues' fabulous work. If you're trying to keep up with the Apple world or the Pokemon world, that's the place to go. Thank you, Renee, for being here. Appreciate it. Mr. Andy Anako's proud technology journalist at the Chicago Sun-Times. And he is... soon to be acquired by somebody, right? The Tribune is being bought by somebody.
Yep. I don't know who to suck up to yet, but I've got the basket of mini muffins packed up, ready for an address label.
CWOB.com. No matter what happens, he'll always be at CWOB. And, of course, IHNATKO on the Twitter.
In the cigar.
Mr. Alex Lindsay is also on the Twitter, at Alex Lindsay, LINDSAY. And I think he wants to Lindsay something.
No, I like to, you know, let things mature, you know, before I jump into it. You know, I've never tried to learn an instrument that wasn't at least 1,000 years old. You know, like it's just, you know, like things have
fair enough.
And I've discovered this new
sack
platform.
Butt before it's time.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I've heard of this thing that I've decided to go ahead and try using. It's called Instagram. I think it might be big. I think it actually might do really well. Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram. And
what is it? Instagram?
Hold on.
Is it Alex Lindsay?
It's just Alex Lindsay. I think
it's a website for posting photos.
It's either Alex Lindsay or Alex B. Lindsay. Yeah, it's a website. I don't know. I signed up for it.
He doesn't even know what it is. Yes, it's Alex Lindsay.
See, the thing is, look, I'm in it. The one thing I've learned is that I jump really quickly. See, I got one from the show already.
I actually knew you were on Instagram because all of a sudden I started seeing posts from all over the world.
Yeah.
All over the world.
There's some fun ones there that I shot in India last week while I was wandering around Old Delhi. And
you had an account before. You just never used it.
Yeah, I open up accounts when I see something almost immediately so I can get Alex Lindsay. And then, because I'm competing with some guy in Australia.
Because I was following you, because I don't remember adding you recently. No, I've always followed you.
Here's the problem, is I started it, and then I was like, I didn't like the idea that I had to take a picture inside of it, and I was going to be stuck with that little square photo.
But not anymore.
And then I stopped using it, and that changed a long time ago. But
yeah, look at this is his first one.
Yeah.
That's in those days, 2011.
Yeah, so it's not like I did something with it, but then I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with
this. That's when it put frames around it.
So I didn't like it. And so I just was like, you know, the heck with this. And so then a couple weeks ago, I started playing with it again.
I'm glad you did because you are a great photographer and I love seeing your world travels. So look at that monkey.
That's so
awesome.
Monkey and little monkey. That's an Old Delhi on the roof of a square. So anyway, it was
with Alex, you feel like you're traveling. You're seeing the world.
Yeah, it's
nice.
So anyway, I'm gonna do a lot of that. I won't necessarily tell you why I'm in certain places, but
you can't.
I'll take a lot of photos of.
He might not even tell you where he is. He doesn't seem to use the, location tag ever. Yeah,
that's my whole thing. Everyone has to guess. So I told you on the show. I haven't told anybody on Instagram. So that's all now.
Monkey with a mission.
Figured it out.
Where
so you
am
have to
I?
Figure out where I am. I'm not going to tell you where any of these places are. Dosa for breakfast, by the way.
What a way to live.
Yeah. It was funny. So the little soup over there, the dip.
Yeah.
I thought it was soup.
On the right?
Yeah. They were snickering
soup?
At me.
Don't drink that.
For a couple days, they were snickering because I was eating it like soup because it was really good.
And then I asked for
an authentic Indian breakfast, and they brought me this, and they brought that over, and I was like, I've been eating the dip like soup.
Dosa dip.
Yeah. It does work as a soup. Just saying, it was very good. It was very good, but it's better as a dip.
This one I loved. It says, this statue is built from glass used in HD lenses, and I couldn't figure out if you were mocking it or not.
No.
Is that true?
I asked the person that was there. I said, is that ice? And he goes, no, that's the glass that is used in HD lenses. It's made into the,
into the Buddha.
Yeah, so
that's a HD high-def Buddha.
It's a high-def Buddha.
Wow.
So.
It's in the glass.
That hotel was...
Alexlindsay now on the Twitter and on the Instagram.
Yes.
Nice.
But I'm not sharing it. Like, I don't like the whole, like, I do cross Twitter to Facebook, but I've decided that, yeah, that is everywhere in Old Delhi. Like, it's like this organic.
It's just the wires. You want electricity? We'll hang another wire.
Oh, no, but this isn't just electricity. That's like
everything.
The cable,
TV,
that's the
everything.
Like it's all just kind of added on top, and it's
just put another wire in.
But what's interesting about it is the beauty of it is it's like vines. It's like like technology vines that are
growing
all over the.
I like it that you can see the beauty
the
in
city.
That.
Oh no, I think
I just see the crosstalk in it.
Yeah,
that's what I see.
Why has there never been like a spy movie or an action movie where they fight on a rooftop and then the bad guy falls off
and lands
gets like strangled and gets strangled by the cables, or the good guy jumps off intentionally and uses it like a trampoline, and
or they should have it where he hits it, it slows his fall and he lands, and then they cut to someone all these people's houses where all their TV went out,
right? and they're in the middle of a cricket match, so basically they all swarm and kill him.
And then they're all chasing him, so now he's got a whole town chasing after him, where it was just one guy.
It's actually
Greenland
amazing.
In
this
the
is,
room.
What you're looking at is a single cable subscription shared among 450 people. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of this fabulous episode of MacBreak Weekly. I thank you all for watching. If you want to watch live, we do it every Tuesday right after iOS Today. That's usually somewhere around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. You can go to twit.tv/live, and there's always something going on there. You can also subscribe. Download on-demand audio and video if you go to the website, twit.tv/MBW, or search for us in your favorite podcatcher. We're there. I promise. We've been doing this show since, 2005.
Long time.
Alex started this thing. It's his fault. We also invite you to check out the new Twit store for your holiday gift ideas, twit.tv/store. We moved to a new purveyor that gives us a wide range of stuff, including the very famous Steve Gibson mustache mug, which everybody must have. And I was wearing the hat earlier. It's really a nice trucker's hat. But there's the mug. That is us. Tell everybody you're secure with a smug Steve Gibson on your mug. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. But now I'm afraid it's time to get back to work because break time is over. Alex invented that, too.